Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Are we working? We actually are back. Hey, let me test something. Does the mute button work here? Huh? Let me see. Did that go over the air? I certainly hope not, because I have a bit of a bronchitis thing going here. We had some technical problems. I guess you all know all this. I'll just give you a quick thumbnail sketch. Some technical problems switching the home office from one radio station in Phoenix to the new radio station in Phoenix, and as a result, we have been off the air for a couple of days. Right? Is that the official story? The real story was Randy Rhodes and Tom Hartman and I decided to hell with it and just went on a gambling junket and wound up someplace in Switzerland. I have no idea. They're hard people to travel with, by the way. So anyway, I'm listening to welcome back, everybody. I mean, I certainly missed doing this job for the past 2 weeks. Having 4, 5, 6 days off is one thing. But being gone for 2 weeks, oh, my God. And again, I hope the mute button is working because I do have to keep pushing it here and coughing. Yes, Kathy?
I was just going to say, the last few days there, you and I just kept looking at each other going, those damn bastards over at Air America, I can't believe it. Oh, wait a minute, we're not fired. We still have a job.
Right.
It just seems like we were fired.
It just seems like we were fired again. Anyway, it's good to be back. I know you all missed me, all 7 of you. I certainly miss being on the air. Some terribly weird stuff has happened. You've been following the news. I couldn't believe what happened with the invasion of Gaza. It's just beyond my ability to comprehend. I can't even get my mind around it. We'll talk about that a little bit tonight. Also, we have some sound for you tonight. Uncle Mike's Story Corner tonight. The sound is from exit interviews given by the Death Monkey, Darth Cheney, on CBS. And some other stuff. Bush yesterday was on the air talking about his the monument he is constructing, so to speak, out in the Pacific, the Western Pacific. And the garbled way he talks about it is just one of those things we like to play every once in a while for comic relief. I will be so glad when this son of a bitch is gone. I can't even get my mind around the idea of George Bush leaving. Just get out. Get out. I hope I never hear this rat bastard's name again. Oh my God. Okay, calm down. Down. And today, the photo op, was it today in the Oval Office? There you have 5 presidents, 2 of whom should be in prison, 1 of whom should be on, at least should have gone to trial to find out about the war crimes he committed. But 2 of them, there's no question, Bush and his psychopathic son, both of these sons of bitches ought to be somewhere where, you know, instead of lunch every day, they get waterboarded until they finally tell the truth. I couldn't believe, and there's Barack Obama. It was a very interesting photograph. Here are these 4 weird-looking white guys, and there's Barack Obama, a young guy who's half white. You like that? How's that? And standing there, surrounded by more corruption than one human being should be allowed to handle. Not Carter so much. Carter has been bastardized and ostracized by the political establishment in this country, because Menachem Begin did not like what Carter forced him to do way back in the 70s, and that was to sign a peace agreement with Egypt. And Menachem Begin has hated Carter ever since. Unleashed the neocon right-wing pro-Israel media in this country to turn Jimmy Carter into some kind of a pariah when he is the only American president in 60 years ever to have gotten any agreement between the Israelis and anybody else in the Middle East. But that's a whole different story. So I'm watching this today. I'm watching these five guys standing there, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, and then I hear on the news the projected budget deficit. Budget deficit, not national debt. Budget deficit is going to be $1.2 trillion for this year. Now, there's no way you can put that in perspective. You and I can no more conceive of $1 trillion than we can conceive of, $1 billion. I mean, it just can't be done. We can't do it. I do know this. From the establishment of this republic, until the era of Ronald Reagan, it took all that time for the national debt to reach $1 trillion. What was that, 200 years? To reach $1 trillion. The national debt. When Reagan left office, it was around $3 trillion or $4 trillion. And now we're to the point where the budget deficit for 1 year, $1.2 trillion deficit. And I also hear that deficits are projected now as far into the future as anyone wants to guess. Remember when Bush took office? Huh? And I mean that. Took office. He didn't win a goddamn thing. When he took office, surpluses as far into the future as anyone could predict. Remember that? Thanks to the Republican Bill Clinton. Surpluses as far into the future as anyone could predict. And then Bush took office, shredded our future, our present, the futures of our kids, the futures of our grandchildren, and the miserable son of a bitch also probably set us up for an intergenerational collapse that's going to go on for the next 50, 60 years. This is what they've done. This is what your Republican Party has done. Remember back in 2004, when Raisin Brain, after he stole the second election, he promised to cut the deficit in half by the end of his term. Well, here we are. The deficit then was $412 billion. Now it's $1.2 trillion. That's up there in lard-ass Limbaugh country, isn't it, huh? I'm so old, I still remember the Clinton surpluses. Do you remember the guy? See some hands. Anybody out there see? Huh? Oh, there's two or three. Yeah, okay, thank you. Now, Barack Obama has what is probably going to be an impossible task, but he's going to try. In his way, with his advisors, and I know all you liberals can go hide, and you leftists can, close your ears and close your eyes and go, bah, 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 bah. But he's going to try to pull this country back from the edge of ruin. Watch what happens. The right-wing, America-hating vultures in media have already started, but they're going to attack him relentlessly. The pig man will do it. Hannity will do it. The drudge rat will do it. The right-wing websites, the thugs on television, it's going to be endless, and it's already started. No matter what Barack Obama does, these filthy America-hating pigs are going to do anything they can to complete what they've started in 1980, and that is the absolute destruction of this country. And it's complete metamorphosis into a real, honest-to-God, goose-stepping, militarized, insane, fascist state. I don't know how big our window is to stop this, but we're going to try. I hope you're going to try. I goddamn sure am going to try to stop this in my own little twisted, atheistic, humanistic way. All right, stick around. We have a lot of ground to cover tonight, and it's not going to be pretty.
Texas. I come from Texas. Texas. The new Prime Minister of India is, no. Mass destruction.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. I'm getting a lot of emails in here from people who are listening via the internet about the crappy quality of the sound coming through. Folks, there's nothing I can do about that right now, but Nova M Radio will have it corrected very soon. If not tonight, it will be corrected by tomorrow night. And that's the best I can tell you right now, okay? So you can, if you're listening via the internet, you might want to go to one of the radio station streams that carry the program, rather than to the Nova M stream. And, you should get what? Kathy shaking her head. What does that mean?
I don't think that's going to make any difference until this, issue.
Well, I got an email from somebody that said that,
oh, okay. Good.
That they're getting it through, by going to KPTK, I believe.
Well, share that, please. So everyone will know.
oh man. A couple of things that just caught me before I get to the Middle East situation, and I am going to get to it. Two things caught my attention. First of all, over the past few days, I guess this story broke over the weekend. An investigator in the Alaska State Troopers Union say that political interference from the Ho from Wasilla's office prevented or delayed the drug arrest of the mother of the boyfriend of Sarah Palin's daughter Bristol, who is now the father of. This is hard to follow, isn't it? I mean, this is your typical white trash setup. Even Ann Coulter, the skinniest bitch on earth, was all over NBC. Was it NBC or ABC? ABC, saying that all the problems in America are the result of single mothers. I wonder how Sarah Palin feels about that, since Coulter was talking about Sarah Palin's daughter being an unwed mother. But I digress. The arrest warrant for Sarah Palin's future son-in-law, mother. See, it's hard to go through all this. Her name is Johnston, Sherry Johnston. She's the mother of Levi Johnston, who's the boy who knocked up Sarah Palin's daughter. Isn't that what Dr. Laura says? Knocked up. Don't you like that? Knocked up. Sherry Johnston. There was an arrest warrant ready to go, and it was delayed until after the election. Can you believe that? Now, who do you suppose delayed it? Sarah Palin, the hoe from Wasilla, says not her. Her pimp, John McCain, says not him. Who do you suppose it could have been? I have no idea. It must have just been one of those weird cosmic alliance things that just kind of happened, right? Before we left for a week off and wound up with 2 weeks off because of the screw-ups with Nova M. But we reported the story that Mrs. Johnston had been busted for manufacturing methamphetamine. Well, apparently it was more involved than that. She is working on the same drugs that Limbaugh likes to eat, you know, OxyContin. Now, in addition to selling OxyContin, illegally, of course, unless Mrs. Johnston really has a pharmacist license, which I kind of doubt, those charges, I think, are in addition to whatever charges involved her work as a meth producer. So, I mean, this... It's one thing to be, you know, using your kitchen as a drug lab. I wonder how many of those OxyContins went to Rush. I really do. I'm sure he was on the horn to Sarah early on. Hey, you got any contacts up there, baby? Why not? I can't get them down here. God damn it, they keep busting my maids and, you know, and then they turn state's evidence on me. Thank God I get it suppressed. But you got anything, baby? Jesus. It's bad enough to have a drug factory in your house, But to use the governor of the state of Alaska, the governor's office, to suppress the issuance of a warrant for your arrest until after the election. I mean, these people, you know, they are not white trash. Calling them white trash gives white trash a bad name. You know what I'm saying? Calling them hillbillies denigrates an entire class of people down here in Appalachia. So we just can't do that. We have to realize that the Palin crowd is a whole different crowd, right? That's all I'm going to talk about. I said a couple of weeks ago, I'm not going to talk about this psycho anymore, but that story just really, really got me by the short hairs. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. This last one also kind of intrigues me. I'm fascinated with organized religion, as anyone who listens to this program understands. Being the secular humanist that I am, I approach it from an entirely different perspective. But the stories still intrigue me. I mean, the stories that you pick out of the paper, like this one in New Orleans, police ended a couple of month old protest yesterday at two Roman Catholic churches. The churches are scheduled to be closed by the local archdiocese. Now, this is going on also in Boston, I think, and a couple other places around the country. One of the reasons, of course, it's happening is because the Catholic Church lost an enormous amount of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, as a result of the rape charges and the child molestation charges filed against all these psychotic priests. But in New Orleans, some of the parishioners took turns staying inside the churches that were targeted to be demolished or sold or whatever. They were not going to be churches anymore, probably turn them into strip clubs or something. But some parishioners defied the closing order that came from the archdiocese. And stayed in the church, locked themselves in the church, as is happening in Boston and New York. Now, they took turns occupying these two churches in New Orleans, in the uptown neighborhood of New Orleans, living in the buildings several people at a time. Yesterday, the archdiocese finally decided that, you know, fun is fun, but, you know, there's money in the God business, and these parishioners were standing in the way of passing around the collection plate somewhere. So the archdiocese requested that the police enter the church. Now, I'm not sure how this works. I thought a church was always a sanctuary. I guess it goes back to, as a matter of fact, the word. But it goes back, doesn't it, to medieval times where no matter what kind of a crime, as long as you ran inside a monastery or a church or whatever, in the Christian faith, I guess. I'm getting this all wrong, but I frankly don't give a damn. You were safe. You were safe from the constabulary. You couldn't be arrested. They couldn't come in and get you. Now, of course, the trick was eventually the priest would betray you entice you to come out or force you to come out or whatever. But as long as you were in that church, you couldn't be messed with. Or have I just seen too many movies, black and white movies from the 1940s? I have no idea. But that's the way I've gotten the story. Church was sanctuary. Not anymore. A spokeswoman for the New Orleans Archdiocese, a woman named Sarah Comiskey, said, quote, "The former church buildings have been occupied for the last 2 months. We brought that to a close today," end quote. Well, now that's kind of a snotty-ass way to put it, isn't it? Huh? Isn't that kind of snotty? We brought that. They've been occupied for 2 months. We brought that to a close today. They called in the police. Now, even though I'm a secular humanist, I find that, even though I'm an atheist, I just find that offensive. I really do. Not that I would defend a Catholic church from being invaded by the state. I think both institutions are just about as corrupt as they can possibly be. And as I've said this a million times in this program, the French philosopher Diderot, who said that man will never be free until the last priest is strangled with the entrails of the last king, or the last king is strangled in the entrails of the last priest. It really doesn't matter. It's all interchangeable there. Even so, there's something about sending the police in on orders of the archdiocese to break the door down. One of the protesters, Harold Baquet, a photographer, says that the argument from the Catholic Church that the reason they have to close all these parishes is because there is a priest shortage. You know, first of all, that's BS, and everybody knows it. If there is a priest shortage, I know, ordain women. Oh, never mind. Anyway, he says that's a bunch of crap. Mr. Baquet, he was not arrested, but one of the people in there with him was. Mr. Baquet said, quote, "Breaking down the old cypress door of the church was abominable. It was anti-Christian, anti-justice, anti-peace. We weren't trying to hurt anybody. We were just trying to maintain a Christian community," end quote. I don't know. I guess it taps into the dregs of belief in religious falderal that still exists inside of me. But I find that as offensive as a synagogue or a mosque being entered into by the police, beating the doors down, smashing through the doors to arrest and forcibly remove people who are in there who practice the faith and who are just saying, no, that story just bothered me. As a matter of fact, it bothered me more than the one about Sarah Palin's soon-to-be sister in crime, you know, her daughter's future mother-in-law, holding up their arrest warrant. Jesus, we live in weird times. Here's some headlines. Israel puts media clamp on Gaza. Israeli shells kill 40 at Gaza UN school. Israel halts attack briefly to allow aid into Gaza. Doctors in Gaza, patients lying everywhere. And it goes on and on and on. And don't even, I swear to God, if you send me an email with your, you know, labeling me an anti-Semite, I will criticize this terrorist state Israel as long as I'm on the air. So if you send me an email calling me an anti-Semite, I'll block your email from now until forever. So don't even bother. Don't even bother. These are acts of terrorism. These are war crimes. What Israel is perpetrating against the 1.4 million inmates in Gaza is a war crime. Now, I don't have to state my the statements I've made repeatedly over the past 25 years that I've spent in radio about Israel's right to exist. I'm not even going to go there. This is a war crime. It's an atrocity. This is like what happened in the Warsaw Ghetto. This is what has happened so many times to Jewish civilian populations scattered around the earth prior to the end of World War II. And now they're doing it. They're continuing to do it. Edward Peck, who was chief of mission in Iraq and Mauritania for the Council for the National Interest, whatever the hell that is. He was also deputy director of the White House Task Force on Terrorism in the Reagan administration. He said today, quote, "There are a number of forces at play regarding this this atrocity. One prevents reasonable, balanced information on the situation in Gaza and the West Bank getting to the U.S. public, which is not well informed or even very interested, in part for that precise reason. We don't get any information. The internationally organized Free Gaza Ship, you remember that? I think Cynthia McKinney was on that, that tried to break the sea blockade. That has been gone on for decades, was rammed by Israel last week," he cites as an example. That story did not receive a word of coverage in the Washington Post. Not many people know that Israel has imprisoned dozens of democratically elected Hamas parliamentarians. He goes on, "They're part of what some people call a terrorist group, so anything goes. And that may be the deepest level of bias. The U.S. Code has a legal definition of international terrorism. Title 18, U.S. Code, Section 2331. The list includes intimidation and coercing a civilian population, kidnapping and assassination. An accurate description," Mr. Peck says, "of what Israel has done and is doing." But we do it, so what the hell, right? James Alvarez, remember him? Former U.S. Senator from South Dakota. He issued a statement regarding the situation in Gaza. He said, quote, "The people have no place to hide, no place to run, to escape the indiscriminate bombing and killing of the civilians there. What the Israelis are doing is in complete violation of the Geneva Conventions with respect to collective punishment," end quote. And there's more that I'll share with you when we come back. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy.
Oh, Lord, for a good many years, sound like to me I can hear this morning, people. Death bell ringing all in my ear. Sound like to me I can hear this morning, people. Death bell ringing all in my ear.
And your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Ten before the hour. So, James Alvarez, who used to be the U.S. Senator, a U.S. Senator from South Dakota, very outspoken where it concerned the issues in regarding Israel and Palestine, said today that. Again, let me just go back to this. He said, quote, "The people have no place to hide," referring to the civilians there, "no place to run to escape the indiscriminate bombing and killing that is going on there. What the Israelis are doing is in complete violation of the Geneva Conventions with respect to collective punishment. The Palestinians are involuntarily paying the price for the Israeli elections coming up in February, where the candidates are trying to show that each is more brutal than the other. Hamas held itself to the truce, which was broken when the Israeli military raided Gaza and killed six Hamas people. Hamas responded by firing homemade rockets into southern Israel, which is exactly what Barack and Tzipi Livni wanted them to do." Not Barack Obama, Ehud Barak. He goes on, what is happening is that the Palestinian rockets are landing on homes and land that they themselves, the Palestinians, were terrorized and chased out of when Israel wanted to create a state. And that's true. And I don't care how you try to spin it. I don't care where your sympathies lie. If you are going to deny the history of that sad, bloodied part of the earth, then you're a goddamn fool. And you are not being honest. What is happening over there is nothing short of mass murder. It is horrifying. Horrifying. And as the United States and Russia, now Israel, tells the media and the Chinese, tells the media, the reporters, get out of here. You're not going to report anything. We are going to do our blood work with you not watching, because we don't want the world to know what's going on. The United Nations school that was bombed yesterday in Gaza, where for the most part women and children were taking refuge because they figured that would be one of the safe places. 40 people killed, many women and children. The Israeli military is lying through its goddamn teeth, saying that Hamas fighters fired mortars from the school compound. That is a lie. That is an absolute lie. It's the kind of lie that military commanders, whether they are Russian, Chinese, American, or Israeli, always say. They always say that. That's what we said when we were in Vietnam. We had to burn the village down to save it. We had to do this. We had to do that. Israel is not sacrosanct. It is another state and is committing atrocities against the people in Gaza. The IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, insisted that they had fired several mortar shells near the school. In response to mortar fire from the school, Ilan Tal, an Israeli military spokesman and a brigadier general in the reserve, said, quote, they shot back, referring to the IDF, they shot back to save their own lives. Oh, my God. Among the dead, the Israeli military said in a statement, were, quote, Hamas terrorist operatives and a mortar battery cell, end quote. It is impossible for the United States government to, even if it were inclined to do so, this Bush filthy Nazi regime, to register any sort of protest about what's going on. That's why they have not. This useless Condoleezza Rice.
The parties have got to sit down. It is quite imperative that the time has come that, you know, even someone as useless as she holds back from demanding. These 40 people who were murdered in the UN compound had George Pissant Bush raised his voice 2 days ago, these 40 people would still be alive. This is sick. It is sickening. It is absolutely sickening. And then today, a brief suspension of fighting to permit humanitarian aid? What? To reach the Gazans? Humanitarian what? 18 semi-truckloads of what? What? Bandages? The people in Gaza have been held as prisoners in that the most populated square mileage on earth is Gaza. Those people have been held as prisoners for how long now? They have been blockaded. They cannot leave for jobs. They cannot get food in. They cannot get medicine in. They can't get their sick out. They can't go to work. What in the hell do you call that? I call it war crimes, crimes against humanity, and I don't give a damn who's perpetrating it. In this case, it's the Israelis. In the past, it's been us. But this is an absolute outrage. You know, this great moral superiority that the Israelis claim with a bunch of backing from this neocon, pro-Israel religious freaks in this country is a lie. There's not moral superiority when you do this to people who already live there. You come in, absolutely destroy their country, take it from them, and then for the next 60 years, sit back on your ass and whine about, oh, well, they're fighting back. That's not to be allowed. This is sickening. Welcome back. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network, such as it is this evening. We are back on the air, but if you're listening via the internet, you know that the stream is kind of lousy. That will be repaired very, very soon. Trust me. Regarding the genocide going on in Gaza, in an exit interview conducted not too far from his sacred box of dirt, the death monkey, Dick Cheney, sneered some ridiculous revisionist sewage at Bob Schieffer over the weekend. Schieffer began by asking Cheney about the current situation in the Mideast. Schieffer said, Mr. Vice President, Israel's now invaded into Gaza. Do you think it was a mistake for them to go in on the ground now with this invasion? They had unleashed this bombing attack, killed 400 and some odd people that we know of. Don't you think it was a mistake to go in there? Does this perhaps increase the chances of widening this? Should there now be a ceasefire?
We think if there's to be a ceasefire, you can't simply go back to the status quo ante, what it was a few weeks ago, where you had a ceasefire recognized by one side but not adhered to by the other. It's got to be a sustainable, durable proposition, and Hamas has to stop rocketing Israel. I think it's important to remember who the enemy is here. The enemy, not the Palestinians from the perspective of the Israelis, it's Hamas. You haven't had a conflict between two UN charter member states. You've got a UN member state being attacked by a terrorist organization. And to go after that terrorist organization, I think they probably decided that an air campaign wasn't enough, that they had to go in on the ground if they were going to take down the sites from which the rockets have been launched against Israel. Again, now I'm speculating based on maybe informed speculation, but they haven't told me exactly what they plan to do or when they plan to do it.
Yeah, and if you believe that, I've got a meth lab in Wasilla, Alaska that you can buy, you freak. Hamas is a terrorist organization. As was the Stern Gang, as was Irgun. These are two of the organizations that formed the State of Israel, which is immaterial, I guess, at this point. That was back in 1946 and 45 and 47 and 48. But Hamas, wasn't Hamas elected in Gaza to represent the Palestinian people? Wasn't there a great big display of, oh, let's let democracy work, and this was the result? Whatever happened, never mind. It really doesn't matter. This is written by Amira Haas, writing in Haaretz, Israeli newspaper. Amira Haas is Jewish. What luck my parents are dead. Back in 1982, they could not stand the noise of the Israeli jet fighters flying over the Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon. The shriek of a plane horrified them in their house in Tel Aviv. We don't have to see it to know, they said. That's how it was then. And what now, when from me they would have learned about two-year-old Sham, who climbs nimbly onto the table to look at her sister drawing in her notebook. Five-year-old Tayyib, with the space between his front teeth that shows when he smiles, or 6-year-old Carmel with the picture book she loves. The world is exploding around these children, again and again, just 5 or 10 meters away. For 10 days now, every minute is a minute of fear. Every minute of fear is a minute of death. Multiply that by 1.5 million people in Gaza. My parents despised all their everyday activities, stirring sugar into coffee, washing the dishes, standing at a crosswalk, when in their mind's eye they saw, based on their personal experience, the terror in the eyes of children, the desperation of mothers who could not protect their young ones, the moment when a huge explosion dropped a house on top of its inhabitants and a smart bomb struck down entire families. Salma's mother says, "When I wake up from a restless sleep, I am surprised. I know it's only by chance that I am alive." How would they, my parents, have been able to stand their daily routine now, when they would hear from me about 70-year-old Khaled? A bomb fell on the closed concrete room on the square in the Shabour refugee camp. 2 civilians were killed. Dozens of houses made out of hollow concrete were severely damaged. An asbestos roof fell centimeters from Khaled's head. Only that persuaded her to be evacuated to her daughter's house, 0.5 kilometer away, under the illusion that a new house would be safer. She repeatedly tells her children, "All I hope is that I die before I see something happen to you." Even before the language laundromat developed to its current sophistication, my parents were nauseated by phrases like "the war for peace in the Galilee" or "disturbances of public order," when the public order was the occupation and the disturbance was resistance to it. When order is preventing the Palestinians from having what the Jews have a right to and demand. What luck that they are not alive to hear Ehud Barak and Zippy Livni explaining that we have nothing against the Palestinian people, and the cabinet secretary explaining that there is no humanitarian crisis, and this is just Hamas propaganda. To recognize lies, they did not need to know the names of the people who had not had running water for 5 days or more. Forget the bombardments. Forget the electricity. Forget the food. Forget sleep, but no water? Because of the bombardments by sea, by land, and by air, people cannot go even out to get drinking water from the city faucets. And when someone does have running water at home, it's undrinkable. Because of my parents' history, they knew what it meant to close people behind barbed wire fences in a small area. A year, 5 years, 10 years, from 1991. How lucky is it that they are not alive to see how these incarcerated people, these Gazans, are bombarded with all the glorious military technology of Israel and the United States? "We urgently invite Mohammed al-Baradi to come here and prove we do not have nuclear weapons," says Iyad, a well-known comic, even under the bombardment. But Saturday night he only said, "Difficult, difficult," and hung up the phone. My parents' personal history led them to despise the relaxed way the news anchors reported on a curfew. How lucky they are to be not here, and they cannot hear the crowd roaring in the Colosseum. Amira Haas writing at Haaretz, a liberal Israeli newspaper. And I have something from Gideon Levy that we'll share with you in a little bit. We'll make it an Uncle Mike story corner. In Gaza City, according to CNN, I believe this was yesterday, Gaza's main hospital, overloaded with Palestinians, has reached critical mass, according to a Norwegian doctor volunteering at Shifa Hospital. The doctor said, quote, the injured patients are mainly civilians, a lot of children with dreadful injuries. He also said that at least 25% of the more than 500 people killed were children. The doctor, Dr. Erik Foss, from a Norwegian, said, quote, this figure is rising, and I think it has to do with the development of the war as it moves into the city, Gaza City, end quote, he added. Over 600 Palestinians have been killed, according to medical officials, including a couple of hundred women and children. 3,000 Palestinians have been injured, most of them civilians, officials said. Dr. Fossey said he estimated that about 30% of the casualties at Shifa, Gaza City's main hospital on Sunday, were children, both among the dead and the wounded. It's astonishing. It's astonishing for a society that claims a direct connection to God that they have the ability to do this.
Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
21 past the hour. Continuing my take on, once again, this horror that goes on against the Palestinians. And it has been going on for so long. It's just... It's been going on for a very, very, very long time, hasn't it? We're in the sixth decade now. This is from Amy Goodman's program, I believe, today. Goodman, we have just gotten Christopher Gunness back on the line, spokesperson for the UN Relief and Works Agency, known as UNRWA. Can you give us the latest? Yesterday, we spoke to you when news was just breaking about two schools hit by Israeli fire in Gaza. What do you understand at this point, Christopher Gunness? Gunness. Well, at the Jabalia school, that's the one where the 40 people were killed, we have done an initial investigation into what took place. We are 99.9% certain there were no militants in the school or the compound. Amy. And tell us about this school. A school for who, Christopher? A school for young children. It's one of over 20 centers that we've set up as shelters. We had given the Israeli army the exact GPS coordinates of this building well before the conflict. We gave them the coordinates of all of our facilities in Gaza. The schools are clearly marked, like any school anywhere in the world, the famous blue UN colors, and in addition, a third source of where the school was in being clearly marked. And all that, one assumes that when an army is doing house-to-house fighting in an area like this, it's got more detailed maps than anybody about which building is what. So, you know, three sources, GPS coordinates, the fact that it was marked, and one assumes very accurate Israeli Defense Force maps to suggest that the IDF knew exactly what this building was. Amy Goodman. And what about the other school that we talked about yesterday? There were two different schools, Christopher Gunness. Well, there was an attack at a school called Asma a couple of nights back at 11:30 at night when three refugees went out into the compound of the school. They actually went to the toilet block in order to use the facilities. On their way back, there was a direct strike on the school compound and they were killed. So again, we're calling for an impartial investigation. We want the facts to come out. We want accountability. If anyone is accused of violating international humanitarian law, then we want an impartial investigation. And we want those found guilty of violating the law to be brought to justice, because ultimately a sense of justice will be one of the many elements of the bedrock of future and durable peace. So justice. We need justice, even though that sounds crazy as the guns are blazing in Gaza. Justice? Really? Justice? For the Palestinians? Really? It's the part that I don't understand, I don't get action that is absolutely counter to the best interests of the organization, the person, the society, the country perpetrating the action, whether it's the U.S., Israel, I don't care who it is. And what Israel's doing in Gaza is guaranteeing, I don't know why I get this and the people who set Israeli policy don't. Or U.S. policy, don't. Eventually, somebody in the Middle East that hates Israel because of what has happened over the past 60 years, somebody is going to get a missile that can be launched from somewhere in Central Asia with a nuclear warhead, with a target of downtown Tel Aviv. Eventually, that's going to happen. And where's the nuclear-tipped missile going to come from? Pakistan? It's going to happen because there is no effort, no serious effort to sit down all the factions and bring about some sort of peace, some sort of end to this. So on the day when that missile with a nuclear warhead hits downtown Tel Aviv, then what? Then what? I don't know why this isn't thought about. Because you know then what? There'll be a massive retaliation, probably targeting every single Arab capital and maybe the Persian capital of Tehran. There will be a massive retaliation by the Israelis. Then what? Then what? It is insane for successive Israeli governments to think that the way to bring about peace is to continue these military actions, to continue the slaughter. I mean, my God, I would like to see Israel survive. I really would. This is not the way to guarantee its survival, is it? We'll be back after the break.
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Yeah, I think it's time for Uncle Mike's Story Corner before we move on to some more comments from Bush and Cheney, two war criminals who still run this country. All right, kitties, gather round. It's safe in here. This is called a bomb shelter. It's time once again for an episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner. The title of tonight's episode is And There Lie the Bodies. And it's written by Gideon Levy. The legend, lest it be a true story, tells of how the late mathematician Professor Haim Hanani asked his students at the Technion to draw up a plan for constructing a pipe to transport blood from Haifa to Eilat. The obedient students did as they were told. Using logarithmic rulers, they sketched the design for a sophisticated pipeline. They meticulously planned its route, taking into account the landscape's topography, the possibility of corrosion, the pipe's diameter, and the flow calibration. When they presented their final product, the professor rendered his judgment. You failed. None of you asked why we need such a pipe, whose blood will fill it, and why it is flowing in the first place. Regardless of whether this story is legend or true, Israel is now failing its own blood pipeline test. As Israel has been preoccupied with Gaza throughout the entire week, nobody has asked whose blood is being spilled and why. Everything is permitted, legitimate, and just. The moral voice of restraint, if it ever existed, has been left behind. Even if Israel wiped Gaza off the face of the earth, killing tens of thousands in the process, as the Chechenian laborer working in Sderot proposed to me, one can assume that there would be no protest. They liquidated Nizar Gayan. They got him. Nobody counts the 20 women and children who lost their lives in the same attack. There was a massacre of dozens of officers during their graduation ceremony from the police academy? Acceptable. Five little sisters? Allowed. Palestinians are dying in hospitals that lack medical equipment? Peanuts. Whatever happened to the not-so-good old days of Salah Shahada? When we liquidated him in July 2002, we also killed 15 women and children. At least back then, moral qualms were raised for a moment. Here lie their bodies, row upon row, some of them tiny. Our hearts have turned hard and our eyes have become dull. All of Israel has worn military fatigues, uniforms that are opaque and stained with blood and which enable us to carry out any crime. Even our leading intellectuals fail to speak out on what havoc we have wreaked. Amos Oz urges, cease fire now. David Grossman writes, hold your fire. Stop. Meir Shalav wants a punitive operation. And not one word about our moral image, which has been horribly distorted. The suffering in the South renders everything kosher, as if the horrible suffering in Gaza pales in comparison. Everyone is hungry for revenge, and that hunger is excused by the need for deterrence, after it was already proved that the killing and the destruction in Lebanon did not achieve it. Yes, I know, war is war. After all, they brought this on themselves. They are a terrorist organization, and we are not. They want to destroy us, and we seek peace. Still, is there nothing here that will stop this blood pipeline? Even those whose hearts are hardened by moral righteousness will have to momentarily halt the bombing machine and ask, which Israel do we have before us? What will become of its standing in the world, which is now watching the events in Gaza? What are we inflicting on the moderate Arab regimes? And what of the simmering popular hatred we are sowing throughout the world? What good will emerge from this killing and destruction? It is doubtful. Doubtful whether Hamas will be cut down to size as a result of this wretched war. Yet the face of the state has been cut down to size, as have civilian elites who are apathetic and scared. The peace camp, so-called, if it ever existed, has been cut down to size. Attorney General Menachem Mazuz authorized the Gayan killing, regardless of the cost. Haim Aram, the leader of the new left-wing movement, supported the launch of this foolish war. Nobody is coming to the rescue of Gaza or even of the remnants of humanity in Israeli democracy. The statesmen, the jurists, the poets, the authors, academia, and the news media pitch black over the abyss. When the time comes for reckoning, we will need to remember the damage this war did to Israel. The blood pipeline it laid has been completed. Another episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Not a very pleasant Uncle Mike Story Corner tonight. I'm sorry, children, but sometimes Uncle Mike's Story Corners are more like little slices of horror. Do some phone calls here. Joseph is calling from KPHX in Phoenix. Joseph, welcome to the program. I think Joseph is on line 5. Joseph?
I just want to say a few words. Thanks a lot for being a truth bringer to all of us, because truth is really hard to find these days. And I'd like to say something about what's happening in Israel. I'm absolutely incensed, saddened, ashamed to be part Jewish myself, and seeing what these Zionist bastards are doing to the state of Israel and everybody else. I think there should be a boycott started against all Israel products. I won't buy any myself anymore. I've made up my mind I won't. And I think that the Holocaust that's happening over there, and it is a Holocaust, it's probably even worse than Warsaw and Krakow in Poland. And I just can't say too much about it. I'm ashamed. And thanks a lot for letting me talk.
All right, Joseph. Thanks for checking in. Raz in Canada writes, Mike, about Israel, is there no way the UN can physically enforce the rule of law when it is continually disobeyed? Israel is laughing at the rest of the world. When asked if they cared about all the demonstrations around the world, they said they didn't, as it was mostly Arabs. Also, many of them, top Israeli spokespeople, said that Palestinian suffering cannot be compared to that which their citizens are putting up with, the trauma of sitting in bomb shelters, etc. And they speak with a smile on their face. I would like to donate a small amount of money to the Palestinians, but the Israelis have declared most of them terrorist organizations that we use the money for weapons. I protested to our government in Canada, but Prime Minister Harper is a useless entity who is Bush's bitch, as they call him. The Israelis deny any humanitarian crisis in the Gaza. It's the sheer hypocrisy of them. They're literally dripping with arrogance. One day the U.S. won't have any use for them, and they'll just be tossed on the scrap heap. To start with, the U.S. should immediately stop sending them the several billion they get every year. There are even ads surfacing that actually have been around for a while that are cries for help from Israelis who are poor and starving. They need aid from the West. Perhaps they should try tapping some of their wealthy brethren in New York City and around the world. The Israeli government apparently only uses the U.S. billions for weapons. Norman Finkelstein has a good piece out called The Coming Breakup of American Zionism. That will really be the end of Israel as we know it now. Roz, who happens to be Jewish. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. You know, and eventually there will be some sort of bloody response to what's going on in Gaza. And it'll be directed against the United States, as the last September 11th attack was, 2001. And, you know, Americans will stand around scratching their asses and trying to figure out, well, why do they hate us? And, you know, the last time that happened, this moron in the White House said, well, they hate us because, hey, it's because we buy houses. And it's incredible to me how thoroughly uninformed, misinformed American media has collaborated in keeping us. It makes no difference whether it's television, and I'm not talking about these right wing asses on radio and TV. You know, screw them. Their relevancy is. Is only noticeable in proportion to the ignorance and idiocy that they continue to spread around this country, which I guess makes them incredibly relevant. But forgetting them, just the so-called mainstream media, the complete, utter refusal to put out there a balanced reporting of what has happened in this sad little armpit of the world for the past. You don't even have to go back 60 years. I mean, we can't handle that. Americans can't handle 60 years of history. We're lucky if we can handle 3. Somebody said, well, Malloy, but the New York Times, every day they have a full-color photograph above the fold of more dead Palestinian children, more dead Palestinians. Isn't that fair? Hell no, that's not fair. It doesn't say anything about what has happened and what is happening. Everybody in this country that's not in the elites, and that means you and me, everybody in this country, we're supposed to believe a certain narrative. Israelis good, Palestinians bad. That's it. And that anything the state of Israel does is acceptable because they are this poor little country beset on all sides by these vicious flesh-eating Arabs. And that's the narrative. That's what has been fed very consistently, very carefully, very consciously, very willfully into the collective consciousness of this country for the past 30 years, ever since the first Intifada. back in the 80s, during the Reagan years. Ask the average American anything about this conflict, and I use that term advisedly, in the Middle East. Ask any American, stop somebody on the street who looks intelligent and say, do you know what the Sabra and Shatila massacres were all about? Just do it! And watch the blank stare. And that's just one example. It's just one example. Ask somebody, what's the distance? How many kilometers, how many miles between the West Bank and Gaza? Just ask somebody. Ask somebody what the term West Bank means. The ignorance that has been carefully, consistently spoon-fed to the American public regarding this is just unbelievable. And I've never been able to figure out why. I've tried to rationalize, say, well, it had to do with the Cold War. It had to do with, Arabs bad because they are aligned with the Soviet Union. Israelis good because they're not. And even allowing for that, it still doesn't compute. We have American media has taken former allies and turned them into demons, former demons and turned them into saints. But in this particular issue, Israel and Palestine, there is one narrative, and there has been only one narrative in the American mainstream media for decades. Israelis good. Palestinians bad. Stop somebody else and say, what do you know about identity cards in Israel? What do you know about checkpoints? What do you know about walls that are built and barbed wire encampments? What do you know about the seizure of Arab land, of Palestinian land, the actual goddamn theft of it, the taking of it? And then the building on that land of Israeli apartment complexes. What do you know about that? What do you know? Do you know anything about that? What have you read? What have you tried to figure out on your own? And you know what you're going to get back? Nothing. Absolutely. Blank stares. Or you'll get some smart ass say, oh, you must be an anti-Semite. You must hate the Jews. And it just goes on and on and on. You know, I've said it before. I don't even like to talk about this topic. But how do you ignore the slaughter of civilians and children? They're after Hamas. The hell they're after Hamas. This is a terrorist act by an organized state against 1.5 million people locked down in a concentration camp. Now, historically, this has happened before. And you know it has. And I know it that it happened. And we had a term for it, didn't we? We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. We will get to some phone calls here momentarily, but there's one more thing tonight that I feel is necessary to share with you, and it's by Robert Fisk, who writes for the Independent of the UK. He is a very well-known Middle Eastern correspondent, has been for 30 or 40 years, I believe. He's one of the few people in the non-Arab speaking international media who will address the issue of Israeli atrocities against the Palestinian people. He's one of the few. He writes, "So once again, Israel has opened the gates of hell to the Palestinians. 40 civilian refugees dead in a United Nations school, 3 more in another. Not bad for a night's work in Gaza by the army that believes in purity of arms. But why should we be surprised? Have we forgotten the 17,500 dead, almost all civilians, most of them women and children, in Israel's 1982 invasion of Lebanon? The 1,700 Palestinian civilian dead in the Sabra Shatila massacre, the 1996 Ghana massacre of 106 Lebanese civilian refugees, more than half of them children, at a UN base, the massacre of the Marwahin refugees who were ordered from their homes by the Israelis in 2006, then slaughtered by an Israeli helicopter crew, the 1,000 dead of that same 2006 bombardment and Lebanese invasion, almost all of them civilians. What is amazing is that so many Western leaders, so many presidents and prime ministers, and I fear so many editors and journalists bought the old lie that Israelis take such great care to avoid civilian casualties. Quote, Israel makes every possible effort to avoid civilian casualties, end quote, yet another Israeli ambassador said only hours before the Gaza massacre. And every president and prime minister who repeated this mendacity as an excuse to avoid a ceasefire has the blood of last night's butchery on their hands. Had George Bush had the courage to demand an immediate ceasefire 48 hours ago, those 40 civilians, the old and the women, and the children would be alive. What happened was not just shameful. It was a disgrace. Would war crime be too strong a description? For that is what we would call this atrocity if it had been committed by Hamas. So a war crime, I'm afraid, it was. After covering so many mass murders by the armies of the Middle East, by Syrian troops, by Iraqi troops, by Iranian troops, by Israeli troops, I suppose cynicism should be my reaction. But Israel claims it is fighting our war against international terror. The Israelis claim they are fighting in Gaza for us, for our Western ideals, for our security, for our safety, by our standards. And so we are also complicit in the savagery now being visited upon Gaza. I've reported the excuses the Israeli army has served up in the past for these outrages. Since they may well be reheated in the coming hours, here are some of them. That the Palestinians killed their own refugees. That the Palestinians dug up bodies from cemeteries and planted them in the ruins. That ultimately the Palestinians are to blame because they supported an armed faction, or because armed Palestinians deliberately used the innocent refugees as cover. The Sabra and Shatila massacre was committed by Israel's right-wing Lebanese phalangist allies, while Israeli troops, as Israel's own commission of inquiry revealed, watched for 48 hours and did nothing. When Israel was blamed, Menachem Begin's government accused the world of a blood libel. After Israeli artillery had fired shells into the UN base at Qana in 1996, the Israelis claimed that Hezbollah gunmen were also sheltering in the base. It was a lie. The more than 1,000 dead of 2006, a war started when Hezbollah captured 2 Israeli soldiers on the border, were simply dismissed. The 1,000 dead were dismissed as the responsibility of the Hezbollah. Israel claimed the bodies of children killed in a second Qana massacre may have been taken from a graveyard. It was another lie. The Marwahin massacre was never excused. The people of the village were ordered to flee, obeyed Israeli orders, and were then attacked by an Israeli gunship. The refugees took their children and stood them around the truck in which they were traveling so that Israeli pilots would see that they were innocents. Then the Israeli helicopter mowed them down at close range. Only two survived by playing dead. Israel didn't even apologize. 12 years earlier, another Israeli helicopter attacked an ambulance carrying civilians from a neighboring village, again after they were ordered to leave by Israel, and killed 3 children and 2 women. The Israelis claimed that a Hezbollah fighter was in the ambulance. It was untrue. I covered all these atrocities. I investigated them all, talked to the survivors. So did a number of my colleagues. Our fate, of course, was that most slanderous of libels, we were accused of being anti-Semitic. And I write the following without the slightest doubt. We'll hear all these scandalous fabrications again. We'll have the Hamas to blame lie. Heaven knows there's enough blame for them without adding this crime. And we may well have the bodies from the cemetery lie. And we'll almost certainly have the Hamas was in the UN school lie. And we will very definitely have the anti-Semitism lie. And our leaders will huff and puff and remind the world that Hamas originally broke the ceasefire. It didn't. Israel broke it. First on 4 November when its bombardment killed 6 Palestinians in Gaza. And again on 17 November when another bombardment killed 4 more Palestinians. Yes, Israelis deserve security. 20 Israelis dead in 10 years around Gaza is a grim figure indeed. But 600 Palestinians dead in just over a week, thousands over the years since 1948, when the Israeli massacre at Deir Yassin helped to kickstart the flight of Palestinians from that part of Palestine that was to become Israel, is on a quite different scale. This recalls not a normal Middle East bloodletting, but an atrocity on the level of the Balkan Wars of the 1990s. And of course, when an Arab bestirs himself with unrestrained fury and takes out his incendiary blind anger on the West, we will say it has nothing to do with us. Why do they hate us, we will ask. But let us not say we do not know the answer. Middle East correspondent for the Independent of the UK, Robert Fisk. The refusal of American media to cover this story from a truthful point of view, even no point of view, just report it. Report it as another atrocity committed by one group against another. Why not do it that way? Why has it never been reported that way? And it's not being reported that way now. And 100 years from now, when this conflict is still ongoing, it won't be reported that way then. Why? Why not? What is it about the truth of the Israeli-Palestinian issue that Americans are prevented from hearing? Why? What is it about us that we can't hear or see the truth? What is it? Who is denying the truth? The truth is there. Who's denying that truth to be told to the American people? Who? Who's doing that? And the second question is, why do the American people participate so willingly in their own ignorance? That's the part that drives me insane.
But what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me. You understand? understand what I'm trying to say. Can't you feel?
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Okay, so many other things that also need some attention, discussion, I should say. Not the least of which is, I want to share a little bit more with you here from the Death Monkey, Darth Chaney, and then we're going to take some phone calls. He was on one of his exit interviews. This was on Face the Nation Sunday. Bob Schieffer asked Chaney the unbelievable question about Chaney's reflection on the last 8 years. Chaney, of course, has no reflection, and he can't be killed unless it's with a silver bullet or holy water or wooden stakes. But I guess that's not what Chaney or what Schieffer meant. What Schieffer said was, you came here, you and President Bush were elected in 2000. And as an aside, you know, Schieffer says that with a straight face, right? You came here, you and President Bush were elected in 2000, so I guess I'll ask you the question that Ronald Reagan used to ask. Are we better off now than we were 8 years ago?
Well, I think we've got, I think we've done some very good things over the course of the last 8 years. Defending the country against further terrorist attacks, like 9/11, I think is a major accomplishment, for example. I think we made progress on education with No Child Left Behind and prescription drug benefits for seniors and so forth. I can point to tax policy, a series of policies and actions that were put in place that were significant progress. There's no question but what the new administration and President Obama are going to have their hands full with a new set of problems, if you will.
New
centered
set?
Especially on the economy, upon the difficulties that have developed in the financial markets over the last 6 months.
6 months.
Just as our task when we came in was ultimately to deal with the aftermath of 9/11.
You son of a bitch. You filthy son of a bitch. Your crime family was in power 9 months before the attacks on September 11, 2001. Your task was to prevent 9/11. This monstrous son of a bitch is outrageous. He ignores the so-called good intel that would have stopped the 9/11 attacks and tailors the bad and suspicious intel to his liking as a justification to invade Iraq. I have never in my life seen an American political figure as degenerate as Dick Cheney. You don't get points now for not having further failures after you failed to protect America in the first place. That's like saying, hey, I haven't burned down your house since that first time I doused it with kerosene, set on fire. Isn't that a great accomplishment? And No Child Left Behind, prescription drug benefits for seniors. Oh, stop. No Child Left Behind is an absolute failure by any, as they like to say, metric. And prescription drugs for seniors? Didn't that turn out to be just another Ponzi scheme-like scam? Prescription drugs for seniors. No competitive bidding. And people wonder why Medicare is on the verge of going bankrupt. That's one of the reasons. God, what these people have done. And they're going to walk out of the White House as though nothing untoward happened. Schieffer. The situation in Iraq. What do you see there now? What do you think the state of Iraq is about right now?
I think Iraq is much better off than it was before we went in 2003. and got rid of Saddam Hussein. I think we are close to achieving most of our objectives. We've seen a significant reduction in the overall level of violence. It's lower now than virtually any time since we've been there in the spring of 2003. We've seen the elimination of one of the world's worst regimes. We've seen the Iraqis write a constitution and hold three national elections. We've now entered into a strategic framework agreement with the Iraqis that calls for ultimately the U.S. completion of the assignment and withdrawal of our forces from Iraq. All of those things, I think, by anybody's standard, would be evidence of significant success. And I think we're very close to achieving what it is we set out to do 5 years ago when we first went into Iraq.
Complete dominance of that sad country and the entire oil region. That throat-clearing thing, presumably he was coughing up a small body part from lunch earlier with Scalia, right? Can you believe what this guy is saying? America is better off now than 8 years ago, and Iraq is better off now. We didn't spend billions of taxpayer dollars, lose thousands of American lives, maim tens of thousands of American soldiers, and massacre hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis. I mean, Jesus Christ, it's a veritable Disneyland over there, right? Huh? We secured those oil rights and Halliburton no bids. Hey, it's been a major success.
It's overturned the order of the soul. When they say, repent, 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 I wonder what they meant. When they say,
your host for a Pian's Brian's Future, it's Mike Malloy.
Let it be, let it be. 25 before the hour. Got a couple more of these Cheney quotes that I want to share with you. I don't know about the phone calls tonight. I know some of you have been holding on for a long time, but we'll be here tomorrow night, I hope. After what we're talking about tonight, I wouldn't be surprised if the whole network got blown up. But anyway, back to this exit interview on Bob Schieffer's program on CBS a couple days ago with the death monkey, Dick Cheney. Now, next here, poor old Bob really takes a chance with this Merchant of Death by asking how it was possible to get it so wrong in Iraq on weapons of mass destruction, and did Cheney select the intelligence he wanted to receive to justify his evil plans? Bob puts his entire career, not to mention his entrails, at risk by asking, Mr. Vice President, did you think that perhaps you looked at the intelligence and saw what you wanted to see rather than make a real logical analysis of what was there?
No, I don't, Bob. I think if you go back and you look at what we were receiving as intelligence from the intelligence community, going back to the very day we were sworn in, I've seen a report, for example, that was one of the very first we received that warned about Iraqi's weapons of mass destruction program.
Well, how do you think we got it so wrong? I mean, we thought he had weapons of mass destruction, and he didn't. We thought we'd be greeted with open arms, and we weren't. What happened?
Well, I don't look at it as we got it so wrong, Bob. I think we haven't.
We got a big part of it wrong.
Well,
there weren't any weapons of mass destruction.
Correct. The original intelligence was wrong, no question about it. But there were parts of it that were right.
Which parts?
100% wrong. It was correct in saying he had the technology. Where it was wrong was said he had stockpiles, and he clearly didn't. So the intelligence was flawed. But you never have perfect intelligence in this business. You got to deal with the best you can in terms of making your decisions.
Oh, my God. You never have perfect intelligence in this business. And, hey, ass brains, and when you do have perfect intelligence, like, oh, I don't know, how about this? Osama bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S. When you have perfect intelligence like that, you just ignore it. And then you go with your crappy intelligence from some Iraqi psycho named 8-Ball, right? You bastard. I think it was Q-Ball. The original intelligence, he says, was wrong, no question about it, but there were parts of it that were right. Which parts, you monster? That Saddam was the leader? That part was right. That Iraq was a country in the Middle East? You got that right. Huh? What was the grammar correct? You pig. You filthy, filthy pig. And when Schieffer asked in that pissy little girl bitch voice of his that some of these guys use on television, these crack reporters and investigators, and I generally like Bob Schieffer, but that little bitch voice, right? Well, Mr. Vice President, how could we have got it so wrong? What happened? Bob Schieffer knows goddamn good and well what happened. And Cheney says, I really don't look at it as we got it so wrong, Bob. Excuse me. Paul coughed up another little foot there, didn't I? I don't really look at it as if we got it so wrong, Bob. No, things went just as we planned. Haven't you been watching? Jesus, God. We're never going to recover from this, are we? So does the death monkey think he may have gone too far in authorizing the illegal wiretapping of innocent U.S. Citizens? Huh? Even citizens who are not innocent. Doesn't make any difference. It's illegal. You want a wiretap? Get a court order. So simple. How about robbing us of our constitutional right to privacy? Did they go too far with that? And I got to ask that because Bob Schieffer didn't. Since when was it up to the vice president to authorize any kind of surveillance methods of anybody? The vice president has one function given to him by the Constitution, to preside over the Senate. He's not the head of the CIA or the NSA or the FBI, or the Justice Department or Congress. How did this vile orc get his crusty fingers into so many pies? But I digress. Schieffer says, Mr. Vice President, you said that starting in 2001, the administration, and in many cases you personally, kept congressional leaders fully briefed on the program to monitor America's international phone calls without a warrant. Do you feel... Let me just squeak my ass as best I can. I'm almost 70, and my name is Bob Schieffer, but let me just screw my face up, tighten my sphincter muscle, and act like your pet monkey. Do you feel that maybe, just possibly, you went too far in your surveillance?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I think what we did was one of the great success stories of the intelligence business in the last century.
Uh-huh.
I think what the National Security Agency did under General Mike Hayden, working with the CIA and at the direction of the president, was masterfully done. I think it provided crucial intelligence for us. It's one of the main reasons we've been successful in defending the country against further attacks. And I don't believe we violated anybody's civil liberties. This was all done in accordance with the president's constitutional authority under Article 2 of the Constitution as Commander-in-Chief, with the resolution that was passed by the Congress immediately after 9/11. And subsequently, we have gotten legislative authority, signed up to last year when we passed a modified FISA statute.
Do you believe that the president in time of war, that anything he does is legal?
I can't say that anything he does is legal. I think we do than we have, a historic precedent of taking action that you wouldn't take in peacetime, but that you will take sometimes in wartime in order to do the basic job that you sign up to when you take the oath of office. This is support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Oh, my God. Oh, Christ. Oh, please. Oh, my God. I just, and the ability of these completely soulless, amoral monsters like Cheney and Bush and what's his name? Who was the bastard that was secretary to Rumsfeld and the rest of these people to just blithely, if not blissfully, sit there and say this kind of puke, this kind of garbage, this kind of obscenity. With they sound like Himmler and Goebbels and the rest of the Nazi high command. Just, oh, hey, listen. I don't think anybody's constitutional rights were tampered with at all. Not a bit. I think we were very successful, Bob. You know, sometimes in war time, you know, war time, you know, you have to do things. Last question from Schieffer before Cheney transformed into a column of bats and flew out through a ceiling skylight. Bob asked about a subject the death monkey loves to sink his teeth into.
Let me ask you, Mr. Vice President, a little bit about torture, just a little bit about torture. You've said that you do not believe that waterboarding, for example, was torture. Would you do it again if you had to make those same decisions? Because a lot of people now say that some of our casualties happened because, you know, people saw the publicity of these techniques, the kind of thing that happened at Abu Ghraib.
I would absolutely do it again, Bob. I think the loss of life, if there had been further mass casualty attacks against the United States over the last 7.5 years fully justifies it.
You would suggest that Barack Obama continue
I would.
Those things?
If he were to seek my advice, he hasn't, but if he were to seek my advice, I'd say, look, before you go out and start to make policy based on the campaign rhetoric we heard last year, what you need to do is to sit down and find out what we've done, find out how we did it, what the justification was for it, what kind of results it's produced, and then make a informed judgment about whether or not you want to keep these things. But I would hope he would avoid doing what others have done in the past, which is letting the campaign rhetoric guide his judgment in this absolutely crucial area. We were very careful. We did everything by the book. And, in fact, we produced very significant results. And I would hope that for the sake of the nation, that this administration and future administrations will continue those policies.
So I don't look like such a bloodthirsty maniac. Psst, Cheney, did you hear about the CIA officers who gave the Afghan warlords the Viagra in exchange for rock-solid intelligence against Al-Qaeda? Did you hear about that? I listen to this monster, and all I see is underneath his suit, I see the SS uniform, and if he were to open up his collar, there would be the death's head.
Truth, justice, and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
We will we'll do the George Bush announcements of his efforts to protect non-oil producing regions of the seas tomorrow, I guess. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and Kathy Bay, the executive producer. 10 before the hour, almost 9 before the hour. Since I don't have a call screen in front of me, is there James is calling from St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. James, welcome to the program. Hey, James.
Hello.
Hi.
Mike, first off, I'm a founding member of I Love Your Show. I'm glad it's back on again here. We met in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was the rude guy that asked why Randy Rhodes couldn't be on live, and you didn't answer that question up there. You were too polite.
Well, maybe because I have no earthly idea.
Well, you know what? The thing is, there was no earthly idea why you were off at all. But anyway, well, anybody was off. I wanted to inform you of what Mike, I'm 59, you know, just shortly of your age. You know some of the Jewish and I'm a Jew born and raised, but I mean, I was raised sort of agnostic. My father was a medical man. He didn't have any reason to believe any of that stuff. He escaped being a rabbi and the Orthodoxy Gaga and the clannish experience from where he was in the East Coast to the West Coast and became an informed intelligentsia, and that's the way we were raised. And our practice was limited to the fact that the relatives would have rolled over in their graves. Bottom line is, I was 13 in 1963, and at that time, the experience was tzedakah on Sunday to plant trees in Israel to make the desert bloom for the kibbutzim. And are you ready for this? There's no Palestinians. And the best in the Klan, the best in the whole fabric of the Jewish American experience, has a silence sworn upon their heads. The most you can do is be questioning and skeptical without some kind of other experience. Somewhere in your family you might have a rabbi, a reformed even. They go and take relatives over to the war zone, of all places, at the point, you know, when the bombs are, you know, going off from both directions. And the irrelevancy of the truth at that point is so fundamental that you are not allowed. It is sworn to be a disallowable conversation among, you know, the relatives. And I've had this experience, and I'm a pariah in the family with the experience of, that I cannot associate with a whole piece of my family at this point. That, you know, they won't discuss this. They have no way to break the silence. They can't do it. And the sad part about it is the good ones, the good people who are also basically sworn aside, it's just not allowable conversation. Mm-hmm. And if you do, it's rude and impolite. But the best that they can do is say, I have a reflexive reaction to the discussion. Mm-hmm. That's basically the word it is. So there, in the 60s, no Palestinians. There's no issue. And then, you know, the 70s, it was the beginning of, well, you know, in 67, obviously, the war was the righteous war. And at this point, you know, it's amazing at all that there's any discussion still. It is completely amazing. The Jews in my circle who are not convinced of, you know, the stupidity and horror of this nightmare going on, and, you know, the numbers just speak to it, and the wall, and all of, you know, all the facts, basically.
Sure, sure.
I just want you to know that the inability to discuss is out of fear. I mean, I think that really underpins it. It's almost like the underpinning of fear, the thought of going to prison and knowing that you aren't the biggest, you're going to be the rape victim forever until you die.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like the noise in the background for even reformed Jews. Now, I mean, people like Amy Goodman, who had an Orthodox rabbi three generations back,
mm-hmm.
who are able to overcome and make the question mark, at least.
Right.
And look at it and go, well, here's what I see, if you can get in. I mean, they're not even allowing CNN to go into the Gaza. You know, the facts should be able to speak to their, you know, to everybody. Well, what you don't know is what you don't see and what you can't see and what they're saying, there's another side, obviously. Anyway, I really would love to talk some more, but I know you haven't got much time.
Well, James, thanks. And I'm glad that the station you're listening on, KTNF, now
I'm so glad they put you back
on live.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Great.
Oh, God.
Great. Thanks to management up there for doing that. Thanks, James.
You take care.
I appreciate you checking
Bye-bye
in.
Bye-bye now.
And it's interesting that I have to say, this is shocking, maybe, but that's the first time I've ever heard a Jew admit that faith or fear is what prevents the discussion in so many families. And that's almost reassuring to know. If I were to make a list of the names of my friends and put them in columns, this group is Jewish, this group is Muslim, this group is agnostic or whatever. This group, I don't know and I don't care. But if I had to do that, probably the longest list would of my friends would be people who are Jewish. I mean, there's just no way for me to not have that as a reality in my life. I've said before, my youngest daughter's godfather is Jewish. My godson is Jewish. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. All the people I know. We had a party here Christmas Eve, and of the 80 people that were here, probably 40 of them were Jewish. Which is why they were here Christmas Eve, frankly. But I can't understand, and now maybe I'm getting a slight handle on it, the fear of saying, no, this shouldn't be happening. Well, I certainly am glad to be back. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.